this week's episode of Moral Victory. We are hot, getting weighed down. My pockets are weighed down right now. 12-0 run, 7-0 last week, 5-0 the week before. We're going to keep this momentum. We're at 75% on the season. If you had bet $100 on every single game, and we're 36-12, you would be up close to $3,000 at this point. So we're going to try to keep that momentum going. We know it's going to be tough to do, but there's nothing stopping us from another undefeated week. And when we win, when I win, you win. So we're gonna talk a little bit about the picks that I'm looking at. We're going to talk about how the playoff four is shaping up right now, and how this one could be a pretty quiet week as far as teams getting knocked out of the picture after some craziness the last two. So gotta get into all that now on this episode of Moral Victories.
Sports. The thrill of victory.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
The agony of defeat.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Every loss teaches a lesson that's important for a young athlete's development.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in the progress that we've made.
But it's important to remember that sports is about having fun, not winning.
You're here for one goddamn specific reason.
What's that, Earl?
Jack us!
You're full of shit. Fuck you.
This is Moral Victories with Jared Shanker.
You really think I give a flying what the people on the radio call say?
It is almost time for another weekend of college football, which means it is time, and NFL, which means it is time for another episode of the Moral Victories podcast. Now firmly entrenched and into the double digits of episodes. Number 11, episode 11, the luckiest number in roulette. That one's hit for me a lot, number 11, and just been a lucky year overall picking games. Actually, 12-0 in our last 12 games, 5 winners 2 weeks ago, 7 winners this past weekend in the college realm, beginning with an Arizona State Stanford under on Thursday, taking it all the way up to the second to last game of the weekend, San Jose State getting 28 against San Diego State. That was one I didn't give out officially, but one that I was just on such a heater that I was like, why not? San Diego State hasn't scored more than 28 points all year. It was one I talked about a little bit on the podcast last week that I liked. And so, you know, we won a bunch of money, might as well just go ahead and end the day, end the weekend like we're supposed to. So pockets a little fatter today, weighing me down a little bit. 12-0 run, 36-12 overall. Actually, recording this one from the new home compound, the home studio, a.k.a. the living room. It's been a bit of a hectic week with a new move. We're usually recording right out of Penn Station in New York City, in the heart of Midtown, right above Madison Square Garden. Just schedules not allowing for that to happen this week. Again, I am your host, Jared Shanker. Dougie Dash returning next week. We believe he's always up in the air. He's always traveling. So it's been a little difficult for him to make it out here lately. But we're going. We got a couple games we're going to talk about. Like I said, on this heater, know it's going to come to an end soon. I don't pretend to know more than anybody else. I've just had some good luck picking games. I kind of have my own strategy. I don't have any type of computer system or people talk about what their numbers tell them. I don't have any of that. I just got a good feel from having covering the game for so long, and just kind of being able to pick up on where lines are maybe not nearly where they should be, where there's a little bit of discrepancy on where I feel teams are and what the Vegas line is. And so we do this for fun. You know, it was actually pretty cool. I had somebody DM me last week after going 7-0, saying that they would do these. I'm sure there's probably a lot of, at least a handful of you that do the same. You got to pick five teams every week, and the only way you win is if you hit all five. You got to pick them all against the spread. Got to hit all five. And he was telling me he had about two or three teams that he was pretty high on that he was going to play, but he needed two more to round it out. And hitting five teams is hard to do. To go 5-0 is actually really difficult. And so he had three that he felt comfortable on. He needed two more. And I forget which ones he ended up taking from me, but he ends up taking these last two teams. The pot was just a tick under $2,000. And I know he at least won part of it. I think he said it was down to him and maybe one other person was going to end up going 5-0 as well. But you know, that's cool to help somebody, you know, pocket an extra $2,000 and, you know, have a little bit of fun doing it. That was actually pretty cool to see. I'm not really the bragging type. I know I bring up my record a bunch, but that's more just for fun and in jest. I know that it's going to come. We're at 75%, and that's almost impossible to keep up. We're going to try our best. There's only a few weeks left in the season, which is soul-crushing. I know it's probably soul-crushing for you guys just to think that next week's games, after we do these ones this weekend, we're going to be in November, which means there's like four or five actual weekends left. And then bowl season is can just be so hard to predict that you're definitely going to have no chance of going 75%. That's what you just gotta hop on now. Follow on Twitter at Jared_Schenker, but I'm not putting the picks there anymore. I'm going to, you know, kind of give some thoughts and whatnot there, but we're doing something new. The picks are at a website now. It's jaredschenker.com/picks. Couldn't be easier for you guys to get to. jaredschenker.com/picks. They're still free. You just got to click an extra couple links. But if 7-0 is going to be behind those links, then it's worth it. No ads or nothing like that. You just, you know, there's going to be a little bit of write-up, a little bit more meat than just listing five teams over on Twitter. I'm going to tweet out the link so you guys can still just get it there. But this week actually going to be a little bit tricky, as part of the reason I'm recording out of the new home compound today is I'm going to be flying out to Denver tomorrow. Usually we record on Tuesday. Tonight it's Wednesday, so I have a little bit more of a feel of where I might play this weekend. But with this Denver trip upcoming and heading out on Thursday, I don't have as great of a feel for the games this week as I did last week. I don't almost ever play or at least give out seven games. Like, come on. What I give you guys isn't always all that I play. You know, we're all susceptible to you know, that 11:59 play or that 3:29 play or one. You know what? We're all going to be with our buddies watching the night game. Let's pick a side and for the 8 o'clock primetime game and, you know, have a little fun. But I don't, with going to Denver tomorrow, flying out there, I'm not going to show my internet access is going to be. I'm not going to be able to watch really any of the games. I don't know what I'm going to be playing on Saturday. So I don't know if I'm going to have three games, four games, five games. But we're going to go over a couple games that I'm feeling. And but I feel like this would be the right weekend to take a little trip, to take a little getaway, because I don't see the rankings really shaking up that much. I don't think we're going to see too much of a shift in the college football playoff picture this week. There's only a couple games between ranked opponents. The only two teams that really, outside of a team obviously taking a bad loss, I really feel like the only two teams that are truly in contention for a playoff spot that could get knocked out this weekend: Georgia, if they lose to Florida; Washington State, if they lose on the road to Stanford. Stanford obviously out of the playoff picture, and I don't even think Florida's in the playoff picture. They were blown out by Kentucky, which I believe was in the Swamp, and then said they beat Georgia. They have a great win against LSU. You'd have a great win with Georgia. The problem is you get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game, and Alabama's just going to spank them. That's going to be two losses of double digits on their resume. And then what do? You can't. That probably puts them as the 4 seed, and then they're just going to replay Bama again, who is obviously going to be the number one and undefeated. So Florida, if they lose, this weekend. They are even if they win, I still think they're out of the playoff picture completely. It doesn't really matter if they finish 11-1, get to Atlanta. They're going to get smoked by Bama, and they're not going to give us a rematch there. So Florida, sorry, done. Get them out of here. The only team that actually has a playoff chance on the line at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Well, I don't even know what they call it now. Like the showdown or the world's party or whatever the hell they call it. Georgia's the only one with a playoff chance there. And Washington State, if they lose, now that was such a cool scene, such a feel-good story with them beating Oregon, having game day there for the first time. That was really cool. But if they lose this weekend, they're out. Washington State being a 3-point underdog there. So I don't think this is the weekend to get away. If you gotta go pumpkin picking with the girlfriend, or you gotta go take the kids out somewhere, or you just want to get away, get up into the mountains. That's what I'm doing. This is the weekend to do it, because I don't think we're gonna see too much of a shakeup. I think the kind of the top four that everybody has going into this weekend is what we're gonna see coming out of it. I feel that the ideal top four for me, if I want to have the perfect playoff of the four teams that I think is going to give us the best chance, or of the three best games, Bama 1 versus Oklahoma as the 4. I do have optimism that the Oklahoma defense is going to be better under Ruffin McNeil. For whatever reason, Stoops, especially with the head coaching change, it was just a weird fit there. It didn't seem like the players were completely on board. And even though they ended up giving what looks like 24 points in the first half to TCU, obviously the defense came and played lights out in the second half, but then TCU offense is garbage. But even the first half, when they let up 24, that's pretty much just Kevontae Turpin just dominating on special teams, and Oklahoma making a lot of dumb decisions on special teams as far as kicking it to them. But with the offense that they have, with Kyler Murray, with the guys they have on the outside like Hollywood Brown, Sermon at running back, and Oklahoma always has an All-American type at running back. I do believe that offense can give Alabama trouble, because this is not your typical Alabama defense. So a lot of people were saying that on Twitter, they're telling me, well, you can't have Oklahoma ahead of Michigan at this point, but I don't see Michigan as a team that is going to compete with Alabama, because I don't, well, that's not true. I think they can give Alabama a bit of a game, but I don't see them being capable of beating them, because I don't think they're going to be able to put up enough points to keep pace with Tua and what that offense is going to be able to do. Is there any team that can do that? Probably not. But who has the best chance against an Alabama defense that looks a little down this year, that looks a little bit vulnerable? I think that's Oklahoma, kind of what they did against Georgia last year. The problem is that Alabama will probably be able to put up 48 on them again, and they end up getting knocked out. But I actually think they're the best number four team to have there. Number two and three matchup, Clemson, you got to have them in there. And then either Notre Dame, or that's where I would want to see Michigan. A Clemson-Notre Dame or a Clemson-Michigan matchup. Ohio State's done. They got to be out of the playoff picture. I think similar to last year, like this loss is just going to be too much for them to overcome. Unless, you can't really ever say a team is going to be out. But I think that with the way they lost, every team's pretty much allowed a forgivable game, but I just think that's what really kept Ohio State out last year, the really, really bad loss against Iowa. And this one, while Purdue in the scene were, Purdue's a really good team, the scene was really great, it's still no excuse for how Ohio State lost. And frankly, they just haven't been great all year. They made enough plays against Penn State to win that game, but they didn't look good against TCU. Oregon State which just got blown out by Cal at home. Was able to put like 30 on them. So I just don't see them as a great team. And I said this after the Urban Meyer, when his suspension was handed down and everything came out, I was like, there's no chance that he coaches another 3 years. And nobody looks more miserable on the sideline this year than Urban does. Every time they cut to him, he's running his hands through his hair. He's bent over, just looking. He gets grayer. He just grays from kickoff to when the game is over. He's a darker shade of gray every single time. And there's no chance. I said before the year, there's no chance he makes it to year four from now, which would be the 2021 season. I don't know if he's going to come back next year. I think this is the year that Michigan beats him. I'm not a huge believer in Shea Patterson. I'm not a huge believer in that Michigan offense, even though they actually are pretty solid this year. I don't know if the offense is at the point where they're going to show up in a big game. But they are the odds-on favorite, in my eyes, to win the Big Ten and finally get over that Ohio State hump. But with that, let's say we're in the home compound today. We're pepping for a flight to Denver. Obviously, I've packed nothing at this point. It is 11 o'clock on Wednesday. This podcast will drop in less than 12 hours. I will be headed out on a flight in a little more than 12 hours, and I've done absolutely nothing to get ready for that. By far the worst travel procrastinator. I will forget pretty much everything I need to bring to Denver. I've never been there before. Don't even know what I'm going to need. But whatever it is I need, it's not packed at this point. So we're going to move along pretty quickly and get into some games. games that I've been looking at. There's a couple real sucker bets out there this weekend. And NC State last week, and I talked about on the pod, it was one that I was definitely going to play. NC State getting 17 against Clemson. And even as I talked about it, it was just so funky, that line. Anybody that had seen those two teams play the last 2 years against each other knew that for NC State to be that much of an underdog was a bit of a surprise. And one of those things where the people out in the desert know a heck of a lot more than we do, that even though a ton of money, public money, was coming in on NC State, it kept moving in Clemson's favor. It kind of tipped me off, and I ended up taking NC State, still a sucker bet, a first half play of getting 10.5 as part of an 18 parlay. Turns out that was the only loser of that 18 parlay, and that game was too early in the day to hedge anything, so a small $10, $5 parlay that would have paid quite handsomely, blown by Dave Doran. So that was a sucker bet. I can only blame myself on that. But it looks like there's a couple of those this weekend. The Iowa-Penn State line, I think, looks a little funky. That one's moving up. There's been some sharp money on Penn State. But sometimes, like, you know, I still like the Iowa side a little bit there. I don't know if I'm going to take it when push comes to shove. But like last week, you know, if a line looks funky, it's for a reason. And you got to stop yourself from being that Joe Public guy and just going with whether it's the Patriots or Alabama every week, because they're like, even Alabama's against the spread record, it isn't awesome this year. But sometimes you got to go with what feels right. And you know, there weren't a ton of people on last week on Oklahoma giving 7.5 on the road at TCU. But you look at everything else around that game, even though Oklahoma had struggled a whole bunch in Fort Worth over the last few years, you know, I was confident in the coaching change on the defensive side of the ball. They're coming off a bye. They're coming off a loss. I really felt that the TCU defense isn't nearly as good as it has been. TCU has watched their season spiral a little bit, and they had a real embarrassing loss to Texas Tech the week before that I thought was going to, you know, kind of crush that locker room a little bit. So sometimes, even if a line doesn't feel right, if your instinct is telling you that you still think it's there's a good side to play there, even though it's going to be the heavy public side, then sometimes you just got to go for it. So I kind of see that with Iowa a little bit, but it's still enough where it scares me that I don't know if I'm going to take the Hawkeyes there, but I do think they are they could be a solid play this week. Georgia Southern, by the time you listen to this, that game could be over. They're getting double digits against Appalachian State. That's another one. Georgia Southern's a good team. I have them for the over their regular season win totals. I believe they've already hit that. They're a really good team. If they're not in the same conference as Appalachian State, they maybe win that conference. But that's another one where it seems like Georgia State should be getting a good amount of money, and that line is actually moving in Appalachian State's favor. To it was around 8, and now it's up to past 10. I've seen 10.5, and kind of give you some pause. But I think that's a live dog right there. I do think Georgia Southern has a good chance of pulling off that upset. They're really good. They can control the clock. App State, obviously, they're really good. Probably should have beat Penn State. And they're just having a great year. But 10 points for what is probably the second best team in the conference versus the first the best team in the conference. Yeah, I don't think I don't think that's a bad play there. And I believe they are at home. BC plus 4 against Miami. BC at home. I do like that one. I think that's maybe one. I think BC is a solid team. Their defense is really not great this year, which is unusual for a Steve Adazio coach team. But Miami's offense is very up and down. You don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. It looks like A.J. Dillon, the star running back for BC, is getting healthier and healthier. He could be one that makes it back into the lineup. So that is one game where I'm looking at. The BC side looks a little good. I don't know if I'm going to take that one. but that's a big game for those of us who would have taken BC over on the regular season win totals. I think I had them at 6.5, and they're looking great. But if they get this win against Miami, that pretty much locks it up. No, don't want to sweat this one out. BC started off the year so strong. Let's just get this one out of the way. And move on. I got too many other ones we got to sweat about, like Missouri. Have them under 7.5. But this is another one that looks like one of those sucker bets. Missouri, who got killed by Alabama, as everybody does, but who has had just some really, really ugly games. The loss to South Carolina was just inexplicable. One of the worst performances as far as like how a team is so in control and somehow manages to lose a game and to lose to South Carolina and Will Muschamp, who is not going to outcoach too many people. But Missouri giving 7 points against one loss, number 12 Kentucky, who's been one of the biggest surprises and biggest stories of the college football season at this point. That's just one that line is so funky that I think I'm going to be on the Tigers. And it's not just because the line is funky. I don't think Kentucky's going to be able to keep pace with the Missouri offense. The Missouri defense, not great. But the Kentucky is so one-dimensional where they can't throw the football at all. Their only means of moving the football is just methodically down the field. And if Missouri gets the ball first, they get up 7-0, maybe, you know, forces a punt, somehow gets up 14-0. Kentucky's not built to come back. There's nothing they could do there. So, actually, even though, and I don't like taking teams a ton in these type of swing games where it's going to affect my regular season win total on them. But actually, I do like the Missouri pick a whole lot. I don't think Kentucky's going to be able to keep pace with them there. So I do like Missouri. Florida getting 7 against Georgia. I'm going to have a play in this game, and I just haven't decided if I'm going to take the Florida side or if I'm going to take the under of 52. I think once since 2010 has these two teams topped 52 total points, and I don't think that they're going to be able to top that this year. I think if I had to make a decision right now, that I would be taking the under on this one. Both teams, I don't think either coaching staff really trusts their quarterback at the moment. Felipe Franks, he's no longer hot garbage. He's just bad as a quarterback. sorry, it's that time of year again where, out here in New York City, it's getting a little cold. Cold season coming along, so cough is coming on, but I think under 52 is a play there. Neither coaching staff really, I think, is in love with their quarterback at the moment. Both teams want to run the football. Florida actually been pretty good at running the football when they want to against teams with some pretty strong defensive fronts. They're able to run the ball pretty well against LSU when they wanted to. Georgia, they're always going to be loaded there at running back. Both defenses obviously solid, even though Georgia's defense is not nearly as good as it was last year or as good as people thought it was going to be. Florida's defense better than people thought it was going to be, especially early on in the year. People thought they were going to take a step back, and they've actually not been as bad. Flip that, they've been one of the best defensive units in the country when nobody thought, really, for the most part, that they were going to be that this year. So I think that really the only way that these teams are eclipsing 52 total points is turnovers, something funky on special teams. But neither team really turns the ball over a ton. They're in the top half of FBS in not turning the ball over. Neither team is great on kickoffs as far as returning it. Both teams, there are some things in the punt game where Georgia is pretty solid, is ranked pretty high in far as punt returns go. Florida, not great as far as where they rank as far as punt return defense, but that's mostly just from the LSU game. Neither team pretty much gives up any punt returns to their opponent. I think Georgia's given up 2 all year. Florida has given up maybe 7 or 8, but 5 of them came against LSU, and like 90% of the yards came against LSU. So 52, these teams are only hitting 52 if something crazy happens where it's a bunch of turnovers, special teams touchdown, defensive touchdown, something like that, and these teams just don't really lend themselves to that. So what I think you're going to see is I think Florida, if you can still get them at 7, is a really good play. They're capable of winning the game outright. I don't see it happening. I think it's going to be a close game where I'd be surprised if at any point either team was up by more than 13 points or so. I think they're pretty much going to be within a touchdown of each other the whole game, because I think both teams are going to play rather conservatively. Even though both are coming off the bye, the teams are always coming off. These guys are always coming off a bye in this game, and they generally don't hit that 52-point mark. So I just think the under is probably the best play, but if you're going to take a side, I would say Florida, but, maybe it is one where Georgia comes out and they win, 20-10 or 24-13, 24-14, something like that. So I think the under 52 is the better play there. Houston giving 7. This is almost like Houston giving 7 against undefeated USF. This is pretty much that Missouri-Kentucky game we were just talking about. You would think USF undefeated, going against a Houston team that has been a little up and down, isn't going to have their best player. They're obviously not the Houston team that they were 3 years ago with Tom Herman. Houston, you could see Houston being a favorite against USF, but to be a 7-point favorite is a little shocking. But the fact of the matter is USF is just really not a good team. They are a fine, solid AAC team, but they are not deserving at this moment of being in the conversation for the group of five representative in the New Year's Six. They're just not, they might not even be one of the five best group of five teams at this point. They've been skating by. They were not good against UConn. I actually had the under 69 in that game last week, and up until the fourth quarter, there was a bit of an offensive explosion. But USF, everybody like equates them to this great offense, and they're just not great offensively this year. Houston, they have a really good quarterback. The defense is solid, even though they did give up a ton of points to Texas Tech earlier in the year. They're not, it's not the best defensive unit. Like I said, there could be down their best player, but I think Houston, they've just been a really good as far as group of five teams go for a while now, and I think that's going to be one I'm probably going to play, in that for the line to be that big against an undefeated, knowing that there's probably going to be some public money wanting to go on USF because they are undefeated, because they have that ranking. You know, it tells me, for the people that do know way more than me out in Vegas, you know, they know something that I don't know. And that's worth throwing the money on, because I do think you see Houston winning by double digits there. One that's almost double digits, which actually was a little bit of a surprise to me. Nobody wanted to believe me when I was tooting Virginia's horn last week. When I was talking to some people, they were like, really? You know, you're going to take Virginia? They've not looked great on the road. And if they're still Virginia, Duke is a pretty solid team. Nobody's a bigger fan of Daniel Jones, the Duke quarterback, than I am, and I'm going to get to him in a second. I love him. I think he should be a first-round pick. I think he can be a really, really good quarterback. He's inconsistent. He has his good games. He has his bad games. He's been injured a little bit. I think he's been injured both years, these last 2 years. But... And getting back to what I was saying, I like North Carolina getting 9 against Virginia. I think that's just swung. Like I was saying last week with UCLA, I think the Virginia perception has just swung too much. Where because they beat up on Miami, because they were able to blow out Duke on the road at Duke, which, I mean, it's not much of a home environment there. You're not really... Duke isn't going to get any type of spectacular home crowd for them. So I don't think it's anything crazy that they were able to go on the road and beat a solid Duke team. North Carolina, I was ripping them last week. I was saying that UNC Charlotte actually might be a better team than them at this point, which still might be the case. UNC, for what they were in 2015, it's been an embarrassment as far as what they've become, but they are not as bad now as they were at the start of the year. They've gotten some guys back from suspension, and I don't think that these close losses back to back against Virginia Tech and against Syracuse is gonna crush that locker room to the point where they're not gonna get up for Virginia. I'm not worried about the toll, like the emotional toll of two games where, frankly, they should have won, that they end up losing in a very North Carolina type way, like giving up a 99-yard touchdown drive to a quarterback that was signed to Kansas under Charlie Weiss, which is what happened in the Virginia Tech game. I don't think that's going to be the type of one that crushes North Carolina's spirit. And though, as I say it, damn, that sounds like it would be something that crushes your spirit. But I just think 9 points is just too much for Virginia to be giving at this point. Again, like UCLA was given 7 points originally, and then moved up to 10. It's just way too many points for what we kind of know what this team is, which Virginia is maybe the best coastal team, which still puts them like around 40th best Power 5 team. So, and even before the season started, Bronco Mendenhall coming out and saying he has like 20 ACC caliber type players. Maybe that's a motivational thing, as obviously they have been one of the better ACC teams in what is a garbage ACC year. But I like North Carolina getting the 9 points there. That could be one where they pull off the upset outright. I think I think Virginia is set up for a bit of a letdown. And staying in the garbage ACC Coastal, which, fingers crossed, I don't know if it's still possible, but if every team can go 4-4, that's been the dream for anybody that's been near the ACC for like the better part of the last decade, is to see the Coastal, which has been terrible for so long now, to just every single team finish 4-4. And I don't know if it's possible, and it probably definitely won't be possible if Duke wins on the road at Pitt, which is what I think. Duke, a 2.5-point favorite on the road at Pitt, which is coming off a bye. David Cutcliffe, frankly, is just one of the best coaches in the game. I don't think this loss to Virginia as crushing for their Coastal division chances as it was. Duke is a solid team. They are capable of going on the road and winning against some solid teams. I think their win against Baylor was on the road. I don't know if they played Northwestern on the road. I think they did. And both games that they won pretty handily. Duke is a very good team. They just can be a little inconsistent, but that's what you're going to get when you don't have a roster full of 4- and 5-star players. They're just not going to be able to perform every single week. But I think I like Duke giving 2.5 at Pitt. I think that's one I'm going to play. We talked a little bit about Oklahoma earlier, and this is one where I hate taking Kansas State, because they are just one of those teams where, even though historically the Wizard Bill Snyder is able to pull off upsets like this or keep them closer than people expect, they haven't been the same K-State team in a while. They've been bad at quarterback for a little bit now, but oddly enough, for as much as the Big 12 is known for its offense, whether it's like West Virginia, Oklahoma, I actually think Baylor getting 14 against West Virginia this week is another solid play. But for as much as the talk about Big 12 is about quarterbacks and offenses, they might have like two of the best, most physical running backs in the country. David Montgomery at Iowa State, who I fell in love with when they played Iowa last year. Like, that dude does not go down on the first hit. And then on Kansas State, Alex Barnes, man, that guy is like Jamal Lewis. He's got to be like tipping 240 pounds. He's probably like 6'2", 6'3". Dude is a hog. And I think Kansas State is just going to give him the ball and give him the ball and give him the ball. And I don't like that K-State played so well. I think it was Oklahoma State in its last game. I believe that was last week, where Kansas State was really able to control the game. And Alex Barnes, that dude is just, like I said, he's one of the best running backs in the country that nobody knows about. But I think K-State can try to shorten the game by giving it to Barnes, letting some clock run. And this is one where maybe, you know, they're getting 24.5 points. I think you're hoping that Kansas State can hit 28 and make this a 52-28 game where you know, they cover by that hook. I kind of think that's where you're going to try to win that one. Those are some of the ones that I'm looking at. I saw USC as a favorite over Arizona State. At this point, probably just fade USC every single game at this point. They didn't cover against Utah. I mean, they're getting 7 points on the road at Utah. Solid program, very good Pac-12 program, but USC coming off a team, coming off a year where they were in the New York Six game and have some talent coming back. I know they lost a lot. I know the over-under for them going into the year was 8.5 wins. I know they lost Porter Gustin, but to just get blown out by Utah, it's just time to fade those guys the rest of the year. It's time for them to probably move on from Clay Helton too. I think the experience, you know what you're going to get at this point. Even if, you know, patience pays off and they win 10 games and compete for a Pac-12 title next year, what inspires confidence in USC long term? There really isn't anything. So I think it's probably best, depending on what the coaching market looks like, depending on who the best hire is going to be, depending on what other jobs open. This could be the year for USC to make a move. And as much of an awesome guy that Clay Helton looks like, he seems like one of the truly, truly good guys in college football. I just don't see it making sense to bring him back. And then the other one, actually, the one game I was also looking at that was a bigger game, Iowa State giving 3 against Texas Tech. With Texas Tech, Alan Bowman, I believe Alan Bowman's back. I know he played last week. So I was looking at Kansas, and then once I saw Bowman look like he was maybe going to play, I didn't end up taking Kansas there. But I'm not – I think Texas Tech is a solid team. Obviously, I think Iowa State is really good. But if Bowman is in at quarterback, it's just not a game I'm comfortable taking there. And, I mean, that's pretty much what I'm looking at as far as this week goes. Like I said, we're doing it from the home compound. Today for this podcast, I'm about to fly out to Denver. I know we've been a little shaky with the podcast today. There's just been a lot going on, moving places, doing some trips. Dougie Dash has been traveling. But we're gonna get back into kind of how it was when we started, where we bring on a guest every single week. We do a lot more fun stuff. We just don't talk about gambling. We want to keep it like a 50-50 split. We'll have some fun at the beginning, do some picks at the end. It's just bear with us for a little while. We're kind of getting some kinks out. We're kind of letting our schedules free up a little bit, but that's going to do it for the podcast this week. Download, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, follow on Twitter at @Jared_Shanker, bookmark jaredshanker.com/picks. That's where all the winners are going to be. 36-12. We haven't lost in 3 weeks. 3 weeks undefeated. I'm gonna probably try to do some NFL picks on there as well. Again, depending on what my internet looks like there. We're not gonna be able to do it this week, but we're gonna start a newsletter where every time I make a pick, it's gonna go right to you guys, right into your inbox, right to your phone. So make sure you do all that. Follow on Twitter, download, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. And that is it. Episode 11 in the books. We will see you guys next week on more Roll Victories.